Well, in this part of Focus 580, we are talking about the condition of the nation's infrastructure. And here, basically what we're talking about, things like bridges and roads, transit, schools, drinking water systems, dams, our systems that deal with waste, all of those things that are very important and often we really don't think about until there is a problem. Just recently, a report was issued by the National Society of Civil Engineers taking a look at various pieces of America's infrastructure and assessing its condition. And overall, the condition they find is not good. In fact, overall, to America's infrastructure, they give a grade of D+ and say that over the next 5 years, just to pretty much to maintain things, we need to make an investment in this country, $1.6 trillion, a lot of money. But we'll talk about some of these things and get into them more specifically in this part of the show as we talk with David Schultz from Northwestern University. He's director of the Infrastructure Technology Institute there. He's a transportation engineer and planner. He came to Northwestern in 1992 after spending 25 years in the public sector, including deputy public works commissioner and budget director of the city of Chicago, and budget director, parks director, elected county executive of Milwaukee County in Wisconsin, as well as being a transportation planning, working with transportation planning agencies in southeastern Wisconsin and northeastern Illinois. His professional interests include public infrastructure management, land use and infrastructure project implementation. He's joining us this morning by telephone. As we talk, as always, questions are welcome. 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. So at any point here, people have questions, they're welcome to call. Mr. Schultz, hello.
Good morning, David. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And yourself?
Oh, pretty good.
Great. I appreciate you giving us some of your time.
Glad to do it.
It seems that, you know, this issue of infrastructure, it's one of those things that's difficult to get people to think about until there is a problem. For example, not very long ago when they had the big power blackout on the East Coast, now suddenly people are talking about the electric transmission system, where before, you know, that was not high on people's list. And I guess for people like you and the other folks who contributed to this report, a big challenge is simply to get people to think about it.
Yeah, it's a real problem in the sense that I think the way people think about infrastructure is a combination of ignorance and apathy. I mean, people don't know and don't understand and don't appreciate the role that infrastructure plays in their everyday life. And therefore, they don't really care about it. And they don't care to get involved in issues. The interesting thing about the power blackout in August is that in the previous report, which the American Society of Civil Engineers issued 2 years ago, they included the following quote. They said, "The nation's energy transmission infrastructure relies on older technology, raising questions of long-term reliability." And in the new report, they document the fact that the annual investment in transmission lines has gone from $5 billion to $2 billion. In other words, there's been a significant reduction in the investment by the electric power companies in transmission infrastructure, probably as a result of deregulation. They simply don't make as much money on that as they do on either generation or distribution of the pole into your house.
Mm-hmm. Well, there, you know, you make the point that just 2 years ago, in 2001, the society went through a similar exercise, and that when you compare what was found at that time with the most recent report, not only have certainly things have not gotten better, and the price tag for remedying the situation has gone up. So if anything, the things are getting worse, not better.
Well, it's an interesting time. I mean, we probably right now have the worst financial situation that state and local governments have confronted in this country since the Depression. Now, some of that is self-made. States and localities went on a bit of a spending spree during the 1990s, really buoyed by, in the case of Illinois and other states that have income tax, capital gains taxes on the stock market increases. And when those went away, We were left with an unrealistically high level of funding, and the governor and the legislature are wrestling with that now. But what that's done is it's really ratcheted down the amount of money that is available for capital investment. I always like to tell people that if you're making a choice, say at the county level, between resurfacing a county highway or feeding the prisoners in the jail, the Constitution means that feeding the prisoners in the jail will always win, because you have to treat those people humanely. And so what's happened is I think that the budget pressures at the state and local level have really squeezed the ability to invest in infrastructure. Plus, there's just a natural budget mentality, I guess, that you got to guard against, that the immediate operating expenses, the police, the fire, the trash, the sanitation, in the case of the state, the running the university and the state patrol and the correction system and so forth, tends to crowd out the need for capital investment. And our elected leaders and their appointed officials who support them need to keep in mind that it's like the old TV commercial, you pay me now or pay me later. If we don't adequately invest in infrastructure each and every year, what we're doing is we're running up a big bill that will become due. And it will probably become due, David, as you suggest, through some sort of crisis or other.
Mm-hmm. I think what you touch on, what is a fundamental question here, I think that some people would argue that when it comes to infrastructure, particularly if we're talking about, say, roads, schools, the systems that deal with drinking water and solid waste, that it's the people who use them who should be paying for them. At the same time, also, you could make an argument that for the good of the country, that we should maintain these systems, and that you know, maybe I have some interest in the strength of the infrastructure in New York City, even though I don't live there. So it gets down to this question of who pays, and to what extent should infrastructure maintenance and improvement be a local or a regional issue, and to what extent it should be a national issue and get some national funding.
Yeah, that's a real interesting issue to delve into. Many of our infrastructure systems are already on a user pay system, more or less. Here in Illinois, we pay a gas tax, we pay a sales tax on gasoline that we purchase. And the estimates are anywhere, it depends on who you talk to and what numbers they figure into the calculation, but the estimates are anywhere from 60 to 90% of the cost of the street and highway system is paid for by users. Now that leaves the, obviously, anywhere from 10 to 40% to be paid for by the general taxpayer. In transit here in northeastern Illinois, we recover about half of the cost of the transit system from the fare box, leaving the other half for the public. But I always hasten to point out that the transit system is really joined at the hip with the highway system. You can't really look at the transit system in isolation, because if you don't provide good transit alternatives for people, they're simply going to migrate to the highway system, and you're going to have much greater costs there. If you look at water and sewer around the country, we typically pay for that with user fees. And frankly, where I disagree with the American Society of Civil Engineers, of which I've been a member for, 40 years, is that I'm not sure that there's a big federal role there. I think that the problem with the water system, for example, is that local water officials and the elected representatives of those units of government simply haven't been willing to raise the water rates sufficiently high to recover the money necessary for capital investment. There's no magic about that, and I think that the one thing that I'm disappointed at in the society's report is its continued reliance on you know, let's get more federal money, let's get more state money. And I think you know, no one likes to pay taxes, and obviously the debate of the level of taxation is an important one and an ongoing one in our country, but I think that the local governments simply have to step up to the plate and do a better job of both charging for services like water and sewer for which they can charge, and of making the commitment to say we're going to increase taxes necessary to invest in infrastructure. Now, unfortunately, the nation seems to be going the other way, and if you follow the California recall circuits at all, what you saw is there was immediate no-tax increase pledge. And while there may be a lot of water in that budget out in the state of California, that doesn't really appear to be the case. And so one has to worry, since there are already some indications that California had been disinvesting in their infrastructure. And I think that we have similar problems going on here in Illinois in terms of our ongoing budget problems. And I think we're already taking some steps down the road to disinvesting in infrastructure. The report card that you refer to says that the state of Illinois is doing pretty well. For example, we're doing much better than the country in terms of the condition of our bridges. We have done, a pretty good job on airports and transit. I think we've done a remarkable job, particularly up here in the northeastern Illinois megalopolis. But, that was dependent on the so-called Illinois First program, which was enacted by the previous governor in the legislature. And that really is pretty much over. This is the last year of that. And the result is that when the legislature reconvenes in the spring, late winter, to consider their fiscal 2005 budget, they're going to have really front and center on their plate what to do about highway investment, transit investment, and other needed infrastructure investment in Illinois. Yeah.
And if people, by the way, I want to mention, too, if people are interested in looking at the details on this report and they have Internet access, it's very easy to go to the website of the American Society of Civil Engineers, and they can read all about it, including taking a look at this report card that we have mentioned that shows these categories: roads, bridges, transit, aviation, schools, drinking water, wastewater, dams, solid waste, hazardous waste, navigable waterways, and energy. It assigns a letter grade to each one and also establishes a trend. Is it getting better? Is it getting worse? Is it about the same? And in none of these categories do they find things getting better. In some of them, they say, well, I guess it's about the same as it was. I'm sure that some people will find particularly distressing, and I suppose in any of these categories there are serious issues, but the one that gets the lowest grade of all, the grade of D minus, is the schools, public schools. Now, and again, if you look at infrastructure by state and you go to the click on that and you go to the state of Illinois, you look at the main concerns there, at least as these engineers represented. Schools, again, one of the top three concerns.
Well, there's a couple of problems with school funding, obviously. One is that we have a system here in Illinois where our school funding is overly dependent on the property tax. And in many areas, particularly up here in northeastern Illinois, the property tax level for school districts is capped. And the result is, when you have any sort of significant growth at all, you end up with a lot more little kids than you end up with space in the schools. There's other reasons as well, Dave, including the way the schools have changed. Class sizes have gone down in some areas. There are new special education requirements that have only come on the scene in recent years. And the result is that you need more space per kid than you did in the past. But if you look at the overall school situation, you combine the problems with funding, with the problems with the program, and, yeah, you get into a situation where you simply don't have adequate amounts of schools. I just expand on that a bit. Up here in northeastern Illinois, we have a kind of an interesting situation where people are actually appreciative and understanding of the need for school facilities, and so typically referendums up here to raise the property tax cap for capital purposes, for school building investment, are successful more often than not. But when it comes then to the operating expenses needed for the schools, the teachers and other kinds of expenses, the referendums tend to be unsuccessful more often than not. And I think the school superintendent in Elgin, maybe you can talk to him at some point in the future, has got two brand new schools that they completed this fall that they couldn't open because they didn't have enough operating funding. And that's one of the real truisms of infrastructure, is the condition of the infrastructure will feed back very quickly into operating expenses. If you have a road system that's deteriorated, not only does it cost the government more money to patch the potholes and do the periodic maintenance and repair necessary to keep that thing in any kind of reasonable riding condition, it also translates directly into the motorist expense. I think American Society of Civil Engineers estimated that the average person, motorist in Illinois, spends over $200 a year on damage as a result of, or at least excessive wear on their vehicle as a result of the condition of the roads. And you can go right down the line in terms of transit, in terms of airports, in terms of water and sewer, and you can say as these systems are not adequately invested in from a capital perspective, what it does is it drives up the operating costs. And here in Chicago, we're really digging out from under decades of underinvestment in our transit system, which really drove up the operating costs for the CTA and Metra, and to a lesser extent PACE. They don't run a rail system. And so that link, I think, is something that a lot of people really don't understand, that there is a clear direct linkage between the investment in the capital infrastructure and the operating costs. And those operating costs drive right to the bottom line of a local or state budget. So you really need to think about it in that context as well.
We're talking here in this part of Focus 580 with David Schultz. He is an adjunct professor of civil engineering at Northwestern University, where he is also director of the Infrastructure Technology Institute. And we're talking a little bit about a report that was issued just maybe a little bit over a month ago by the American Society of Civil Engineers, looking at infrastructure in the United States and the fact that a lot of it, roads, bridges, dams, public schools, really needs repair, and a significant amount of money is required. Well, we're going to continue our conversation in a moment. I hope people will just forgive what might seem to be an inappropriate segue if I say we want to talk to you a little bit here about the infrastructure of public broadcasting and our own here at AM 580, because it also relies on support. It does indeed get some funding from the government, but over time, less and less. That means it's very important for people who listen not only to be listeners but also supporters of the station. And now is the time to do that. We encourage people to pick up the telephone and give us a call and make a pledge. 244-9455 is the number to call. Sitting here in studio with me is Jack Brighton, the producer emeritus of Focus 580, now the guy who's in charge of our web operations.
That's right. Actually, I thought that was a great segue, because really, we are talking about the infrastructure of news, public affairs, broadcasting in the United States. That is what public broadcasting is. And the only way it can stay healthy is by continued investments on the part of the people who use it, who support it, who depend upon it. So we count on you to keep that investment, that infrastructure in place for public broadcasting. So if it's important to you, if you drive the roads over the public broadcasting airwaves, so to speak, then you need to keep those roads healthy by making a small contribution. And you can do that right now by calling our pledge line. 217 is the area code, 244-9455. And Rita Schulte, our membership director, the person we have to answer to for the amount of pledges that we raise on this show, is standing by. And we've heard from a number of people who support Focus this morning, have we not?
Absolutely, we have. We've heard from John in Delphi, Indiana. We'd like to say thank you to Pat in Champaign. We've also, as we said earlier, heard from someone in North Bend, Washington. Let me talk a little bit about that, the advance of communication. We're able to reach out all across the United States and any place where there's a computer that can hear WILL AM on the web. That's part of our infrastructure here, is access worldwide, information sharing in our community and wherever somebody can connect to us. And we'd like to remind everybody that we have a very substantial goal to help pay for that infrastructure, as Jack mentioned. For this drive alone, it's $150,000, and that's just a tiny little piece of what we need to raise this year. Our overall goal for fundraising this year is equal to the total amount we're going to be getting from all tax-based resources. So you see that you are a very, very important part of making this station happen with your $40 pledge, your $75 pledge, or your $250 pledge if you want to become a major donor. Jack, we heard from somebody today that said he's listened to WILL for many, many years, and it just finally occurred to him that he could be a big part of sustaining the station just by making a pledge.
Bingo.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what it takes. If you have listened for a while, You've never pledged. You're the person we need to call right now and join the Friends of WILL. As we say, it's a small contribution. We don't expect you to give us the whole $150,000 that we need to raise. Just a small contribution of $40 at the basic membership level, $40 a year. And $75 gets you the member card, which gets you discounts at restaurants and other places around that actually saves you probably more than $75.
Yeah.
So make that call now, and please keep the infrastructure strong in public broadcasting. 217-244-9455 right now.
All right. Thank you both very much. We want to continue our conversation here about talking about infrastructure in the United States. Again, our guest is David Schultz. He is adjunct professor of civil engineering at Northwestern University and is also director of the Infrastructure Technology Institute. And we've been talking about some of the findings of a report that was released to the public about maybe 6 weeks ago by the American Society of Civil Engineers, concluding that the country's infrastructure was not in very good shape, looking at things like roads and bridges, transit, schools, drinking water systems. Overall, their finding was that things are in some cases getting worse, certainly not improving, and that a significant amount of money needs to be spent to improve these things. And again, if you're interested in reading about this and you have internet access, you can go to the website of the Society, the American Society of Civil Engineers, and take a look at the report. We do have a couple of callers here now lined up. We want to bring them into the conversation. Questions certainly are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Let us talk with someone in Champaign. And this caller is on line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Since the electric infrastructure is a really important part of the discussion, I thought I would introduce into it mention of a book that came out recently called Small is Profitable, The Economic Benefits of Making Electrical Resources the Right Size. The basic message of this book is that by combining efficiency and small decentralized generation, the costs of dealing with our electrical infrastructure problems can be greatly reduced, and the reliability of that infrastructure can be greatly improved. And I thought that might be of interest both to the guest and to people in the audience.
All right. Thank you very much. And anything you want to say about that?
Well, you know, I think that the answer to that is of course. That is, if we can do a better job of conserving electricity, if we don't waste as much, if we get more efficient appliances, if we get just a better functioning system, yes, of course. And if we do distributed power power generation with things like wind and solar and other kinds of things, then of course. But the problem is that the American public marketplace willingness and ability to take advantage of those is limited. And so those can't by themselves be the only answer. And I think one of the things that has clouded the debate, especially the transmission, and I think, Dave, we always got to think about electricity in three ways. As I tell my students, we generate it, we transmit it at very high voltages over very long distances, and then we distribute it, step it down through transformers and distribute it until it ends up at 110 volts AC in our outlets. The problem is that we simply haven't, as I said earlier, we haven't invested adequately in the transmission system. The distribution system and the generation system are more profitable, and therefore they've drawn more investment. And I think what happens is that when people, when we have a problem like we had in the Northeast, East Coast, the whole East Coast really, in August, people say, well, we need to conserve more and we need to generate more locally, and the answer to that is absolutely, of course, but the past performance is an indicator of future. The answer is that by itself will not be enough, and we need to invest heavily in infrastructure. And what we're really seeing now, I think, is a repetition on the East Coast of what we saw here in Chicago in the late 1990s when we had some blackouts as a result of power distribution problems that the utility was undergoing. And there was very substantial investment in home generators. And that, in fact, goes the other way. Those are not as efficient as large-scale generators. But if it's a choice of having that or having nothing at all, people are going to have a tank of gasoline and a generator in their garage or on a pad out behind their garage, and the result of that, I think, is really chaotic in many ways. But you can hardly blame people for doing that. So I think we need to pursue our energy situation on all fronts. We need to conserve. We need to look for opportunities for small scale generation, particularly renewable energy like hydro and solar and wind. But we also need to understand that the large generation grid, as well as transmission grid, as well as generation and distribution, needs our attention as well.
Okay. Well, I certainly appreciate the comment, the last call. Let's go on to the next. This person is in Urbana on line number 3. Hello.
Good morning. I'm a friend of WILL, and I appreciate these types of programs. Mr. Schultz, I have a couple of questions. The first is, I was hoping that you could discuss land use issues with respect to infrastructure maintenance in terms of more compact land use being less expensive over the long run. And also, I was wondering why there's such a disparity between the estimates of how much our public road maintenance is paid for by the gas tax. There's a big difference between 60 and 90%. Does that depend on the municipality?
Well, let me take the second question first. There's been various studies done by various people, and there's a couple issues. One is the level of user fees that motorists and truckers and other people who use the highway system pay in various localities. That's part of the difference. But the larger difference is how much of the expense, what kind of expenses do you count in the calculation? And you can make a pretty good case, actually, that you can count a fair amount of the cost of local policing, anything they're doing with traffic. You can have the cost of courts and anything like that. And I think what happens is that when you're very aggressive in terms of attributing costs to the road system, I'm not saying you're right or wrong, I'm just saying you're aggressive, you tend to get to the lower end of that number. And if you limit your discussion to, say, more traditional engineering type stuff, the construction, operation, and maintenance of the roadway tends to be higher. And so I think that that's really the explanation. In terms of the first question, the answer is absolutely. We have chosen in our society since the second half of the 20th century and now in the 21st century to live in many of us have chosen to live in a very sprawled out situation. And kind of the classic number that we use up in the Chicago area is that in the 20 years from 1970 to 1990, the population of the 6-county Northeast Illinois region increased 4%. The amount of land used increased 47%. And so as we tell our students, you can just kind of picture the whole area kind of flattening out and getting less dense. And the more land we use per household, that is, the less dense we are, the more street we need, the more sewer pipe we need, the more water pipe we need, the more electric conduit and telephone conduit and cable TV and everything else. And so land use is, it's not an important factor, it's the controlling factor in terms of the quantity of infrastructure that we need. And clearly the kind of problems that the Engineering Society discussed, one of the main contributing factors to that is that as land use has continued to sprawl throughout the United States, around every urban area, we have simply not kept up and in many ways not been able to keep up with the necessary infrastructure investment. Now, having said that, that you immediately jump to, well, what can we do? The answer is people don't really connect. We talk to our students about it. Engineers and planners know about it. But when we talk about infrastructure, say, in the Chicago suburbs, what you get is an almost knee-jerk reaction to the issue of increasing allowable density. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is, as we referred to earlier in the show, here in Illinois with our incredible dependency of school operations on, and capital on the property tax, the higher density the development, the more likely it is that it translates directly into school costs. And so what we have here in our region, and my guess is you probably have it replicated to a certain extent down in Champaign-Urbana, is the notion that the school boards will actually come into zoning hearings now and will argue for lower density. And their argument is strictly an economic one. If you have 1,000 houses in this development, that we can predict that that'll be so many kids. If you have 500 houses in this development and you use twice as much land per house, that'll be half the number of kids. And so that the school, this is a kind of a systems engineer example that everything affects everything else. The school funding system here in the state of Illinois is driving land use density decisions to have lower density rather than higher density, and in turn, that lower density development is exacerbating our infrastructure problem. So, we do have land use is directly connected. It's the reason we have one of the prime reasons that we have the infrastructure disinvestment problem that we have. But having said that, we've got to address land use on a number of fronts, and unfortunately, it's really the issue. You know, when you talk about infrastructure, and I talk about things that we could do about it, I always leave land use for last because it's the one that we probably have the least control over. It's the one where the relation, you know, this kind of school funding relationship. If you talk to an engineer about that, and their eyes tend to glaze over, and they say, "What does school funding have to do with land use density? Have to do with how many roads I have to build?" And then when you get them to sit down and explain it to them, the light kind of goes on and they understand. And so there's a real educational component that needs to happen really at the local level. I don't think this is something that the state of Illinois or any sort of regional planning agency can impose. People in the community's got to discover that when they make decisions to force developers to spread out their development and make it lower density, they may be addressing the short-term school funding issue or other kinds of traffic or environmental issues, but in the long run, they're committing themselves to long-term, much larger infrastructure investment.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Urbana for our next person here, line one. Hello.
Yeah, actually, you mentioned the schools, and that's what I was going to ask you about, because I remember reading last year that the accountants actually got did something positive in this area by passing Governmental Accounting Standards Board number 34, which requires governments to value their infrastructure and, more like a real business would, so you'd get an idea of how much, what kind of expense it would take to replace the infrastructure. And I understand the Chicago Public Schools is the first major school district in the country to adopt that standard. And, so I was kind of curious if you knew anything about that and whether or not it was making a difference.
Well, the answer is that this is the so-called GASB 34, which is the Government Accounting Standards Board, as you correctly point out. And they, as you also are correct in pointing out, have promulgated a standard that says government agencies must include as part of their annual financial statements a report on the condition of their infrastructure, the cost to replace that infrastructure, and the amount of investment that they've made in that infrastructure, the capital facilities. And the hope is that this being part of the annual financial reports being publicly disclosed, that people will begin to focus on whether the government is doing what we talked about earlier in the program, and that is whether they're shorting the budget for capital reinvestment in order to do the things they have to do in terms of operations. And so from an accountant's perspective, yeah, that information is there. The problem is that information going to be translated into any sort of public interest and public action on this issue? And I think the jury's is still way out on that. I don't know. I read a lot of public financial statements, but I got to tell you, since I came back to the university 11 years ago, I haven't picked one up. It's not something that tends to cross the average citizen's desk. It's not something that tends to show up in the mail. And unless people like yourself or people in the media pick up on it and make a big stink about it, what people are going to find is that'll be disclosed, and it'll be in the back of the annual financial report of the city or the county or the state. But there's more pressing concerns. And so I think the GASB 34 is a very good, potentially valuable tool in terms of getting recognition of not just the importance of infrastructure, but how your particular unit of government, whether it's a school board, whether it's a city, a county, a village, is performing. But people need to take that information and internalize it and then deal with it, whether it's in the voting booth or whether it's in their citizen activism, to say, you're letting the infrastructure slip. That simply isn't acceptable. And the problem is that we live in, a friend of mine up in Milwaukee is on talk radio, and he's got what he calls the 10-10 rule. If you can't explain it in 10 seconds to a 10-year-old, you can't talk about American public policy today. And I was really taken with listening to your news while I was waiting to go on. And it strikes me that NPR may be the only public, or maybe the only media outlet in this country that isn't talking about the Kobe Bryant case this morning. And so, you know, people who listen to NPR, I think, tend to be more thoughtful. They tend to not have the 10-10 rule. And hopefully they can be they're the kind of people that can influence this debate. But you know, at this point, there's no real evidence that the disclosure of additional information on condition of capital facilities and investment in capital facilities, which is required by this GASB 34, has translated into a public policy. And in fact, when you look at the governor's race here in Illinois a year ago, the California recall, people immediately taking a no tax increase pledge. And I can tell you, if you don't increase taxes in this state, you're not going to deal with the problems of either schools or other infrastructure. So, the information and the data will be there in a better way, but it's not clear that yet how it's going to be used to affect public decisions.
Yeah, I hope our local newspaper is listening to you. To ask you one quick last question. Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of curious if I remember a few years ago, Las Vegas was really growing in leaps and bounds. Is it true that places like that are growing, like exponentially and overnight, that the infrastructure, that they're unable to build at the same time an infrastructure, and that the speed of growth really has a huge impact on it? No, I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Well, there's really, if you will, two brands of infrastructure problem. One is that the existing infrastructure system needs to be periodically refurbished and replaced. And the other is that infrastructure needs to be expanded to meet growing demand, whether that demand is from additional economic activity and population, or whether it's from the expansion of developed area. And while it's true that places like Las Vegas and some of the towns in Florida and wherever that have experienced this fantastic growth over the last 20 years or so are really playing catch-up ball in terms of the second part, there are a lot of places in Illinois that are growing as well. The population of this region, six counties in northeast Illinois, is now over 8 million. that's a number that I can remember attending a planning conference 3-4 years ago. They didn't think they're going to reach that number until 2010 or 2020, and yet the census found that we were there. And so I think there's a fair amount of growth in a lot of places, some of which are very surprising, but there's also kind of the built-in overhang of the lack of adequate investment in the past, the deferred maintenance bill, if you will. And that is really, there's some interesting numbers in this American Society of Civil Engineers report. Typically, the way we try and think about this is that we say there's a cost to maintain current facilities and services at their current level. And then there's a cost to improve them, which typically means you're going to take it out and try and deal with the kind of growth-induced issues, congestion, and so forth that we find. The American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials says we would have to increase the national investment in roads, streets, and bridges by 42% simply to maintain them in their current condition. And to improve them, we'd have to increase it by 94%. And the federal government has slightly smaller estimates, but they're still there. I mean, they're still saying that we need to substantially increase the investment to maintain, and we need to increase it greatly to improve. The numbers in transit are even worse. And so the interesting thing about places like Las Vegas is that there's a greater public will to invest in the infrastructure. The problems are seen as immediate. The cause and effect are sort of intuitively obvious, and people are willing to pay taxes, to pass referendums, to do the kind of things that are necessary to get the resources to make the infrastructure investment. And that's not clear that we possess that will yet here in Illinois and other states where the infrastructure is more developed and older and where the growth rate is less. Mm.
Well, this is such a big topic. We've just barely scratched the surface, but unfortunately we've used the time. We've come to the time we're going to have to finish. Again, I would mention for people who are interested in reading on this subject, if you have an internet hookup, you can go to the website of the American Society of Civil Engineers and take a look at this report that we've been talking about that just recently issued, looking at American infrastructure. Then, of course, if you're interested in what's happening up at the Infrastructure Technology Institute at Northwestern, they have a website too. So you can go and look at some of the activities that they're involved in there. Our guest, Dave Schultz, is adjunct professor of civil engineering and is director of the Infrastructure Technology Institute at Northwestern. And I want to thank you very much for giving us some of your time this morning. We certainly appreciate it.
Well, enjoyed chatting with you, David, and good luck on your pledge drive down there.